You're listening to the Northern Virginia Business Podcast. My name is Jessica Dubois.
And I'm Derek Wynn. Here, we chronicle the stories of successful business owners and executives who stand out from the crowd.
Whether you're driven by purpose or profit, tune in to learn how these leaders have built successful businesses,
helping to shape the landscape of Northern Virginia. Todd Rowley, welcome to the Northern Virginia Business Podcast.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Doing great. Thanks so much for joining us. You know, I wanted to start with asking a pretty question, I think, which is maybe a little bit more complicated, but how does a poor farm boy from Michigan end up meeting with governors, presidents, vice presidents, et cetera?
Wow, that's a really easy question to start out with. Thank you for that, Derek. It really is interesting. Certainly not planned. You know, my family in Michigan, where I grew up, as many of my friends know, are all farmers and factory workers. We really were not a family that wore suits and ties. And when I got out of college, Michigan's economy was terrible. It was 1980, prime rate was 18. You know, the prospects of getting a job for a newly minted double major business administration, speech communications graduate was slim, no matter what your academic performance was. So I made a decision that I could either move to Texas, because everybody was moved for Texas, because there was a rumor that there were jobs in Texas, and everybody's moved to Texas. I figured, well, if everybody's moved to Texas, I don't want to be one more guy moving to Texas. And so I did a little research, found out that the D.C. area was a little more recession-proof than others. Didn't know anybody, didn't have any real business contacts, no interviews. Moved down here and just found a job in banking. And it was very interesting because one of the organizations that I got involved with early on in my career by happenstance was within the Fairfax County Chamber. And they were located in a small little office over Merrifield. And I was a newly minted banker. And what I realized is that what you needed to do to make yourself known in that chamber was members. And so I would find new members for them. And I did that for many years. And when you do that, you get asked to do other things. And you get asked, hey, why don't you sit on this board? Why don't you sit on this council? I think early on, it was kind of placating me because they wanted to keep me getting in new members. So how do you keep this guy busy? Well, then, you know, the first real organizational, after a few years of substance that I had, I got invited by a friend of mine to be his vice chairman of the then what was called the Private Industry Council. The Private Industry Council was a precursor of what is now the Workforce Boards. And he wanted me to be the chairman. I said, okay, I'll be the chairman. Or he made vice chairman. And he showed up. I showed up at my first meeting and I said, so what do I do? He goes, you don't do anything. And so I'm good then. You know, I don't need to do anything. And, you know, before he called the meeting, he announced that he was going to run for office. He couldn't be chairman anymore. And he handed the gavel to me. I had no idea what the organization was. And through that, I chaired that group, went through a number of workforce and economic development issues with that group. Other groups came up, other committees. And one was, when welfare to work was in place, I was asked to speak to governors. And that was unique. So long story, but it really comes down to one thing, and that's community involvement and the willingness to be involved.
Yeah, I think two things. I mean, you know, number one, you've got 40 years in banking, 38 years with the chamber. So you were early in your career to get involved. But, you know, it's also, I have to imagine, worked out very well for you based on your goals, your mission, you know, what you strive for, which again comes back to helping to connect people, helping to create jobs, right? So tell me if you can a little bit, you know, when we look at Northern Virginia today, and especially coming out of the chamber and your position where you are right there, right, still active, where do you see Northern Virginia going for the business community, for, you know, everyone who lives here? What does it look like?
Well, I think one of the primary benefits of this region is that, and it's just the nature of where we are and who we are, we don't do much in the way of manufacturing. we don't bend any metal here. And I think that helped position us for what the next economy is going to look like. But I think it's also helped us during times of economic downturn or pandemics or whatever it might be, is that we can pivot to a electronic conversation like we're having right now and continue to do business without too much interruption. And I think that's a key. I think this region is going to continue to be an economic driver and an innovator. And I think the way that we're going to do that is continue use of the cloud and creating opportunities for the citizens, regardless of their age, to be cloud participants.
When you went through the long list of different organizations that you are part of, and really your LinkedIn profile to me is like a dream one. Like I look at all those certifications you have, the schooling, you've been with banking for really your entire career, it looks like, and then all of the organizations you are a part of. When you are looking at those organizations, has it always been about like making an impact, or has it been more about building your reputation, credibility for your career? Like what's driven and what's the purpose behind all of the organizations you're a part of?
I don't think I'm that Machiavellian to do things based on my career, you know, and my image. I just, you know, I think it wouldn't be that. Hopefully it wouldn't be that. You know, I don't think I'm fooling myself. I think the key thing really is, I'll go back to my family. You know, I come from a family of volunteers. You know, so we kind of get used to, you know, kind of what needs to be fixed. And we all kind of show up on that Saturday morning and fix it. You know, whether it's the football field, the church roof, or something else, you know, just, you know, it's kind of all hands make, you know, light work. And I think when I look at the various organizations that I'm in, you know, you kind of go down the list, certainly the Chamber, Northern Virginia Community College, the Workforce Board, Go Virginia, you know, I'd say AWS, I work at, now I'm a ambassador for them. So that's AWS Educate. It really is trying to create an infrastructure where the three pieces, and I think the three pieces become the education community, however you want to define that, the workforce development component, and companies, and you know, regardless of size, small businesses to large corporations, and the ecostructure there is, you know, if you have an individual in the center of that Venn diagram, and he or she has one thing in common, they need a job, and whether they don't have a job, they need to get skills to get a job, or they have a job, and you know, they want to move on to another job. At the end of the day, it comes down to, I need a job. And so I think, you know, using those three components, and you can even include that, the work with, Fairfax County homeless, you know, that I do work for them, because, you know, the one thing that homeless people often want to be is not homeless. And how do you stop being homeless? You have to have a job. And so, you know, if you look at those components of, you know, the workforce development, education, and companies, you know, and you have them working together to fulfill their side of the Venn diagram, then you've created an engine for job growth. And it really kind of goes back to when I was young and everybody wanted, you know, you need a job. I needed a job. And if you look at it back in the day, 2000, you know, if you look at 1980, you know, what did I have? I had education, but I didn't have a pathway to workforce skills, and I didn't have a job. I didn't have a company. So I was in this group. So I think there's probably a part of this that says you need to reach back and help the next person behind you, right? And you know, to the extent that you can be any type of leader and say, you know, come with me, the jobs are over here. You know, come with me, the skills are over here. And I think one of the things, and hopefully we can talk about this a bit, is the demystification of how you can get into these IT, cyber, cloud, coding jobs. And I think there needs to be a huge demystification on that.
Well, let's talk about that. So Todd, I mean, tell us a little bit about this. You told us about your initial education and coming out of school. But from what I understand, that hasn't stopped for you.
Yeah, I am now kind of known as taking. I have a hobby, and my hobby is, and I kind of quote call it my golf, because my golf game really is bad. So this is my golf, and my golf is. I like taking classes. I like always taking classes in something. And I think everybody should always be taking a class in something. And that's not necessarily formal education, not necessarily got to sit in a classroom, albeit if that's what you want to do, great, but you need to be taking a class in something. And so I think since I got out of college, I've always been taking classes. I went to University of Delaware, went to Virginia Tech. I studied scuba diving with one of my sons and got advanced and nitrox certified. And then I kind of turned to the local region, and I was asked by then county chairman Sharon Bulova to sit on the board of directors of NOVA. And I've always had affiliation with NOVA, being in the business community here, but Northern Virginia Community College, NOVA, is really, one of the largest, not largest, community colleges in the United States. And by virtue of that, colleges and universities in general. And so 75,000 students that are taking for academic degrees, and another 20,000 taking it for professional certifications. That's about 95,000 students. So it's a big institution. But what I see is they also put out more IT cyber coding students than any other college university in the United States. And I wanted to see how we could really use that to pivot the economy and the job opportunities for citizens of the region. Because unlike other colleges and universities that might serve a single municipality, NOVA has campuses in Loudoun, Prince William, Fairfax, Alexandria, like Blanket, Northern Virginia. And so they take care of all the jurisdictions, including Arlington. And so all of that, looking at those programs, the question I had for myself and for the region was, we have all these coding, cloud, now cyber classes, but one, is it possible for students that do not have a degree in computer science, computer engineering, some type of advanced math, is it possible for those individuals to take those classes and succeed? And second of all, if you do, what is the employer's response to that? And the only way I could figure out whether that was possible is I had to take classes. And so I started taking classes in coding, gone on to cyber. I've gone into now cloud computing. And, it's been fun. But when people ask me, you really take these classes? I said, yeah, I sit in the classroom, I take the tests, I write the papers, I write the code. And it's possible for people that do not have these other advanced degrees to do this. These are new blue collar jobs that need to get filled, not just in this region, but across the country.
Well, and what did you find when you were taking those classes? Like, what can Northern Virginia do better to support people from all backgrounds? Like, I think of your background, Derek and I are from small towns. I'm from Iowa, which is, my family all works in manufacturing for John Deere, and we have Tyson's over here as well. And so I'm just wondering, how can Northern Virginia best support people to get jobs in these IT sectors?
That's a great question. I think they need to do more of what they're already doing. They've started putting these pieces together in a kind of a neophyte form, where back to work initiatives, the ability to recognize that you do not need to have an advanced degree or a degree to be productive and be able to be contributive to the company. What we're talking about is skills, and the skills are different than the degree. I always say that I know a lot of educated people that aren't that smart. They have degrees, but what is it they actually do? And I think there's a lot of people I know that don't have a degree, and they're probably the smartest people I know, you know, and they know how to, you know, make coding work. And I think therein lies the difference. We spend a lot of time kind of, and I say we, the, you know, I think the some parts of technology industry has spent a lot of time kind of mystifying coding in cyber and cloud, you know, in general IT. And you know, well, you know, you have to have some you know, kind of wizard power to be able to do this stuff. And, you know, that worked for them very well because, you know, if you're contracting and you want to keep your customer, you can't, you have to really, you have to have hands that are touched by God to be able to do this work. No, listen, I love it when I sit down and I sit across from CEOs and say, I've coded in seven different languages. You know, I've done everything from Java, Python, Unix, Linux, HTML5. I've done, and when it comes to, when it comes to cyber is not James Bond. You know, it's not a secret agent. It's really just looking at streams of data and looking for anomalies, and you say, well, who could do that? Well, anybody who is looking at financial data, typically they're looking at streams of cash flow and they pick out a number. Or you have somebody that's on a conveyor belt and they're looking at items that are coming down the conveyor belt and they're looking at things that don't look like they were produced correctly and they're pulling out the anomalies, right? It's the same skills. It's just applying a different muscle to the same action. Coding is not computer science, it's not computer engineering. You're not creating source code. You're not building a computer. And, the best analogy I have there is that the carpenter doesn't make his or her hammer. You know, he or she goes to the hardware store and buys a hammer. And what is a computer? A computer's a hammer. It's a more expensive hammer. It's a fancy hammer, but it's just a hammer. And, if you can use a hammer, you can code. Coding is just logic. If you dress yourself in a logical way, if you drove to work in a logical way, you too can be a coder. I'm a coder. And I think, when I sit in classes with my classmates, and I kind of bend the age average of the class, you may find that surprising. But, I do. And I sit down and I've now taken, I believe my fall class will be my 16th class. So now I'm kind of known. I'm not the anomaly that shows up in the classroom. I'm just another class, I'm just another classman. And with that, I just happened happenstance though to be on the board of Nova and, the media past chairman. But kids don't care about that. Students don't care about that. Average age of Nova students is 28. 17% of our student body is either active, retired military. It's a different group. The companies in this region need these individuals. They need all of them because they don't need degrees. They need people that can work.
Yeah, I mean, I'll reserve comment on just kind of where our society is, right? I mean, it's one of those things. My uncle, who's a master cabinet builder, he would sit down and self-taught. He would go through a notepad and figure out all the radians and cuts to build a spiral staircase with math that he taught himself, right? I mean, like, this is a guy who did not go to school for this. He swung a hammer, but knew how to do this stuff and figure it out. And that's what he told my father one time. He says, the problem today is that people don't think long and hard enough about something. They just give up.
You're absolutely right. People equate degrees with skill. And like your uncle, my father, he stopped school in the 10th grade, not because he wanted to, it's because the depression hit and he needed to get a job and go work and make money for the family. Never went back, but he was extremely good with numbers and, probably could have been an accountant, could have been a CFO, but never got the chance. But he had a lot of common sense and, he was nominated and elected by his, I grew up in a small town. When he didn't put himself on the ballot, his neighbors did, to the school board. And so suddenly this guy, you know, he's on the school board with all these guys that have, you know, degrees, and, you know, they all work for GM, Ford, you know, and their dad, who, you know, works on factory in Tecumseh, Michigan. And after a few years, they made dad treasurer of the school board. The guy didn't graduate 10th grade, but he taught himself double entry accounting on his own. And he kept a separate set of books at home of the school's books. And then when it came time for the year-end audit, he would correct the CPAs on their mistakes on their audit. And, you know, it just, the superintendent and the principal of the school they talked to me, go, your dad would just sit there and say, as chairman of the finance committee, well, we're not going to approve the thing until you fix these things. Well, Mr. Rowley, you're wrong. He said, well, you do your math and I'll wait here. And they come back and say, yeah, we're wrong in our math. You know, and they changed their number and said, now we can vote on it. And they just said that was amazing. That was the kind of guy he was. But he didn't say anything about it, didn't hold it over anybody. He just knew that was the right thing. And I always think you never get lost by taking the high road. Therein lies the difference, is that I had the best professor, and he was, you know, the next bedroom over growing up.
That's pretty awesome. But let's go down the path of that education side, because you brought up an important three-letter phrase earlier, AWS. Let's talk about that a little bit, because, you know, you mentioned AWS Educate, but also at the same time, you know, I want to talk a little bit about HQ2. You know, was it a surprise to you that they announced this area for HQ2?
I don't know if it was a surprise as much as a relief, because the whole waiting thing was just forever. I think the key was it made so much sense for them to be here, from the fact that there were a lot of assets already here. And so I think it was more of a question of where did it make the best sense for them to be. You know, there were two, and I'll say a minor third, regions. One was out by Dulles Airport. Big push out there with the CIT building being taken down. And there was contiguous spaces on both sides of Route 28 that they could have put a flyover, and they could have had basically retail and living on one side and the work on the other. And the other one, of course, is the one that was chosen, which is National Landing, which was never, ever called Crystal City, as I recall. It was always called the National Landing. I think it's in the right spot. And I think, you've got other institutions that are now in that, settling in that region. That's probably part of what you're thinking, is that there's other things that are going to be developed in that region as a result of National Landing going to that region.
Amazon's obviously doing well. What about the rest of the business environment? So how is the rest of the business environment right now? We're still in the middle of the COVID crisis. What do you see going on with the rest of the business environment?
Well, I think the rest of the business environment is doing well. I think it could be doing better. The access to this type of media to be able to conduct conversations, a lot of what we do around here is done virtually, and, you DocuSign, that we can do the work and not have to skip a beat and not have to get, I think it's going to take probably more largely change the way we do business going forward. I think people are going to be more able to feel that they can work in any environment at any time from anywhere. And I think that's going to stay with us. And that's not just business. I think it's education. I think it's legislation. These things all, work in tandem and in partnership. So I think that's going to be a big change culturally for this region. Luckily, we're not dependent on being together to get work done. And that's kind of been proven out. Restaurants, retail, general services have been impacted. The construction was impacted a bit more early on. They adjusted and kept moving. We didn't stop building things during this. We just adjusted the way we were doing things. It's going to be a while till we get, the full machine back to running, because people are still recovering.
What about the banking side? So we went through the PPP. What have you been seeing from the banking side, from companies coming to you all? How has that changed too over the last couple of months?
Great question. I think ultimately National Bank is a small community bank. We have offices here. We have offices in Charlottesville. We have offices up in State College. Different for us because we are not only a close-held company where we all look out for each other. The key there is that the customers and the customers that want to be with us are finding us. You know, we are basically a commercial-based bank where we're taking care of companies. And those companies now realize that they don't need to go into branches. They don't need to physically see the banker. They just need to have a way to communicate, sending PDFs, sending secure emails, electronically signing documents. That was all out there before PPP, but I think it was perfected during PPP. And so, you know, I think we are seeing a large uptick in line of credit, commercial real estate, those type of loans back to what we were doing, you know, pre-pandemic. So, you know, we're growing and, you know, it has been a very successful period of time for us during this kind of post initial pandemic. You know, what are we doing? How do we do it? Who do we do it for? And the last several weeks have really been excellent for us. Probably larger banks are similar. Some of the biggest challenges, and I've worked for large banks, is that, you know, being that large and being that dispersed, it's easy for us to pivot to a new strategy and kind of roll it out, you know, and be a little bit more nimble and efficient to changing things that don't work. Probably a little more difficult for large regional and national banks because there's just too many offices, too many people to try to get on the same page sometimes. I think they will be fine. I want them to be fine. I never want a bank to go badly. You know, it doesn't help anybody when people are losing jobs. Kind of get a central theme of my life, right? Get a job, keep a job, stay on the job.
It keeps people out of trouble too, right? So,
it does.
You know, and speaking of keeping out of trouble, I mean, I don't know how you find time for all of the various efforts you serve on. So I'm just going to recap a couple of these here. So you've got the Northern Virginia Chamber, you've got Virginia Tech, you're on the Pamplin School of Business Advisory Council, President's Leadership Council, Lead Virginia, Commonwealth Cyber Initiative Blueprint, Virginia Initiative for Growth and Opportunity. Am I missing any?
If you are, there are times that I'm signing up for things I don't tell Susan about.
Yeah. So how do you do it? I understand you have a secret.
And I'm happy to share my secret. I think what you need to do is, I think you need to find kind of a central pole in the tent. And in my, you know, everything we talk about, whether it be National Landing or we talk about NOVA, economic development, job, it really comes around, you know, really comes around that job, right? All of these pieces, you know, people say, well, how do you sit on so many boards like you did? And I said, really, what it is this. I may sit on a dozen boards, but it's really 12 pieces of the same board. And I think that there, if you're sitting on half a dozen, I grant you, I have a very hard time, Derek, saying no to people when they come and say, can you help me? It probably goes back to my family and me growing up with volunteers. And somebody looks in you and says, Todd, can you help me? My first thing is, okay, that's gonna chew up a little bit more time. But if somebody that you know and says, can you help me? How can you say no? You figure out how to help them. And so I think that if there's any, and I'm glad that it's not a secret. It really isn't a secret. You take, you know, whatever your passion is, you say, okay, how do I wicker all the pieces that I need to have make this work and make sure they're all facing the same way? Because if you're sitting in a half a dozen to a dozen boards, one, if they all have separate mission, that's chaotic. You're trying to, you know, you're moving all over the place and you're not really being able to move the ball anywhere because they're all very separate organizations. But if you take one central piece that's meaningful and saying, you know, the central thesis of this paper is find people jobs. You know, that's really, we'd all start there. And you say, okay, what pieces do I need? And you start wickering these together. So, you know, I remember having breakfast with somebody and they said, you know, you're all over the place. I said, name one of the organizations that I'm in that is all over the place. And she mentioned, well, you're, you know, the homeless. You're doing something with the homeless. You know, what does that have to do with jobs? And I said, you can't not be homeless. If you don't have a job, you don't have a home. Coincide. If you know where you're going to stay, you solve the homeless thing. Now you got stability, and now you can go get a job, and you can keep that job. And so, but let's take it one step farther. Let's look at the kids. The kids, the people that are homeless, they can't get an education if they don't know where they're going to sleep at night. So let's fix that. Let's figure out where mom and dad are going to sleep. That's where the kids are going to be. The kids can go to school. They can learn skills and get a job. It's systemic. It's generational. And I said, so that, you know, you do that. You take the next piece, and you take the next piece, you know, the workforce board. The workforce board teaches skills that create opportunities for people to get jobs. You take education with NOVA. And NOVA has two pieces. They have the academic side that gets degrees, and they have the workforce side that teaches skill. You know, one of the things that NOVA teaches is certainly, you know, the general education, but they also have, you know, education in all kind of trades, you know, construction, auto mechanics, welding. You know what a welder makes? A welder that's certified can make $75,000 to $80,000 a year. You put that in an economy like, you know, Norfolk, where they're making the, you know, the ships, you can do right nicely at $75,000 to $80,000 a year. I always joke that the welding degrees, you look at certifications, they say, well, people aren't graduating. And I say, well, because as soon as they get certified as a welder, they got a job. They're not sitting around waiting to get their associate degree. They're going to work. You know, I said, that's the best degree you can get right there. I love that because, you know, if you can contribute to somebody's future well-being and you don't know them, I mean, I don't know many of these people, but hopefully what I do is help somebody I don't know and many people I don't know get jumped. But it's really 12 pieces of the same board. It's just making sure they're all rowing the same direction. What I think will hopefully come out of this period of pandemic, there were great programs that were going to help low and middle income individuals that needed to get their education. The G3 program, now that was about $149 million that the Commonwealth had to redirect during all this. Hopefully those kind of programs come back because those are the ones that are needed.
Well, in my background, I'm a former high school teacher. So, you know, where I come from in some of this, and this is insider information, I think the way things are going today and some of the things we're looking at, like, for example, even tech and their proximity to HQ2 and building the satellite feeder campus, you think about how smart that is. I've long said, you know, I don't know why more businesses aren't doing something like that, right? Because the part of the problem is you've got to find these kids when they're younger to be able to recruit them. I mean, you have colleges recruiting kids for sports in middle school, right? I mean, they're scouting them, recruiting them, wooing them over.
Yeah.
Why aren't we doing the same thing for some of these industries? Again, I think it comes back to the demystification of it, right? I have long said, I wish that as a country, we could be as excited about trade schools as we are four-year schools, because at the end of the day, it comes back to jobs, right? And the insider information is the way public schools are looked at today, it really comes down to what are the scores on standardized tests? How many kids sat for an AP exam? You know, and a bunch of other metrics too, but that's really what it comes back to. And I think about, you know, your story with your father. My story with my father, my uncle, you know, same kind of background, same kind of family. And, you know, I even ask myself some days, it's like, you know, would I have been just as happy swinging a hammer? Chances are some days probably yes. But I think where we are today in Northern Virginia, where all of these initiatives you're part of are really coming together, and you look at kind of where the economy is going again, I think it's really exciting.
Well, I think with HQ2 environment, is going to be interesting to see develop, because you mentioned Virginia Tech, and you know my work in the business school primarily, but it falls into engineering and others at Tech, along with the engineering that's going to be developed on the cyber side of Tech. The business school is also going to be putting resources there. You know, primarily they'll be teaching undergraduate degrees, BIT, business information technology, in cyber, business information technology, data and analytics. And those two degrees are highly sought over. And so if you look at those two disciplines in particular, you'll be able to get a undergraduate degree from Virginia Tech in business in that region and never leave Northern Virginia. And you look at the larger picture of that region and what's happening. So now you have business school started there. You've got the engineering school of tech. You've got now the announcement that University of Maryland is going to put a campus on the other side of HQ2, which will be the University of Maryland, Virginia. You know, it's going to be there. You already have the Darden School in Roslyn. And so you've got, one of the things that I'd love to see, I'm hoping to work on, is putting a campus of Nova in Arlington. And it doesn't need to be a traditional campus. One of the things I'm doing with Nova is I meet at past chairman. When I stepped down from that, I stepped into chairman of infrastructure and finance. One of the things that I'm passionate about is not having students that want to go to Nova have to go to our campus that's over in Alexandria, which is not that far away, but it's not Arlington. I'm a big believer that campuses don't need to have trees and, you know, lawns or quad, and they don't need to have any of that. What they need is rooms that have the ability to be taught in. And these days, you don't even need that. We need to make sure that we're taking care of the ecosystem of Arlington to make sure that every individual, not just, you know, young person, because I think education is K through grade. And if you do that, give the infrastructure to be able to study all the time, learn new skills. And I think that environment of HQ2 is going to allow that to blossom.
You made some really good points about education, I think it's keeping it simple and focusing on the important parts of the experience. Well, I think I speak for both of us when I say that we're completely inspired by the passion and I think the hard work you've put into creating opportunity and to make Northern Virginia a better place and a better place to work, especially. Now, we want to thank you for being on the podcast and also want to give the listeners an opportunity to reach out to you or keep up with what you're doing next. What's the best way that they can follow you or reach you?
I'm pretty easy to find. Certainly LinkedIn is a great way. If they want to, they can always find me on Twitter. It's at Todd W. Rowley. And I think the key thing is I want people to get involved in a way that they're comfortable, but to find a way to get involved. I think one of the things that always is challenging to me, and I'll say this from a local, but also on a state legislative standpoint, they tend to keep the same people. You look and say, okay, the new initiative has started, and it's the same people that were on other initiative. And I think the key thing we need to do is get new names. You got to get more people involved, new people involved, or you just come out with the same answers. But find me on LinkedIn, find me on Twitter, Old Dominion National Bank, you'll find me there, just call up. We've got about 100 employees. So if you say, I want to talk to Todd, pretty easy guy to find. Honored to be part of this today.
Well, we really sure do appreciate it. We'll link to all of the various sites you mentioned in the show notes, along with some other articles too. But Todd, again, we really appreciate you being on.
Thank you. Take care. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you for tuning in. You can listen to this episode and subscribe to future episodes on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to give us that 5-star review so that we can get our podcast out to more and more listeners. If you are a business leader or know of any business leaders that you would like to nominate to be a guest on the show, please visit us at thenovabusinesspodcast.com.